I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Today, challenging conversations on the subject of race. At noon, reaction to the Baltimore mayor's call for more black men to help reduce black-on-black crime. And at 1, some reflections on the roots of recent acts of racism and the state of race relations 50 years after the civil rights marches. Up front, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake's call for black men to do more to prevent violence has had mixed reviews. It comes at a time of heightened concern about police misconduct, and it follows jarring comments by the police commissioner that he believes Baltimore is still dealing with 1950s-era racism. We'll get reaction to the mayor's comments and hear from men who are already involved in the lives of at-risk boys and young men. First, the news. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks with you every Monday through Friday here on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City in the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and streaming live online through WYPR.org. We thank you again for making Midday part of your day. Last week in her State of the City address, Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake called on black men to do more to prevent violence in the city. Baltimore City Police reported 211 homicides last year, about 10% fewer than in 2013, but the rate of juvenile homicides increased. 15 juveniles were killed last year in Baltimore, up from 10 in both 2012 and 2013. Of the 211 total murder victims, 90% were African-American males. The majority of known suspects were also black, according to the Baltimore Police Department. Responses to the mayor's comments have been mixed, with her plea coming during a time of heightened concern about police misconduct in Baltimore and a run of highly publicized racial incidents across the country. Two police officers shot in Ferguson, Missouri, where protests continue over the death of Michael Brown, the young unarmed black man who was shot and killed by a police officer last summer. And a video came to light that showed a fraternity at the University of Oklahoma singing racist songs. Here in Baltimore, in Baltimore County, comments about shooting black men were made on Facebook just last week. And at the University of Maryland, had a racist email surface that has prompted a response from the College Park president, Wallace Lowe. I'll share that with you later in the hour. In addition, last month, Baltimore Police Commissioner Anthony Batts told a White House task force on policing that he is dealing with, quote, 1950s-level black and white racism in the city. For our listeners, what do you think about the mayor's comments? That's what we're going to focus on in this hour of the show. What should be done to prevent violence in Baltimore's communities? Who is responsible for that? Give us a call during this hour, 410-662-8780, your opportunity to comment on what the mayor said, her call out to black men to do more in her State of the City address last week. Our email address for comments by email is midday@wypr.org. Joining me for this conversation in the first hour of the show today, we have three men who are already involved in the lives of at-risk boys and young men in Baltimore. Cameron Miles is with us for the first time, director and founder of Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood, a program that he founded, as I say, and he has been at it for almost 20 years. Cameron Miles, nice to have you on the Midday Show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for having me.
James Timpson is back, I'm glad to say, director of the Safe Streets program for Park Heights. James, nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you again.
And David Miller is with us again, founder of the Dare to Be King Project for African American Boys. And David's been with us on the show several times to talk about these issues, formerly with the Urban Institute.
Urban Leadership Institute.
And now with the Dare to Be King Project, which we'll tell you about in this hour of the show.
Before
we get started, let's listen to what the mayor had to say, just a little bit from her speech during the State of the City address. She called on African-American men to do more in their communities to prevent violence and to mentor young people.
We know that there can be no public trust without public engagement. We show anger over police misconduct, but far too often, we ignore something that should prompt just as much outrage. Of the 211 tragic killings in our city last year, 189 were African American men. 189. We need to end the violence in our communities. This year on Martin Luther King Day, I, along with many of you, joined a local conversation in support of President Obama's My Brother's Keeper initiative. There was passion and a determination to do more by everyone in the room. I promise to do more. Our African American men need to believe in their future.
Here's a little more from the mayor's address. She announced plans to address African-American homicides through community engagement and the formation of a task force.
I'm announcing the start of an intense focus on our African-American young men. At the end of this month, I will bring together community leaders and experts for a call to action to end African-American homicides. I want to thank Reverend Jamal Harrison Bryan for serving as our moderator for this inaugural forum. Through this call to action, we will recruit men committed to making a difference in the lives of our children, to serve as mentors, volunteers, tutors, job training coaches, speakers, and more. We will reach out to organizations who are already working on this issue, and we will encourage others to join. We will not do it alone. We cannot do it alone. And most importantly, we cannot afford to fail.
That's the mayor of Baltimore, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, in her State of the City address last week. Your comments are welcome again, 410-662-8780. Let's start with David Miller. What were your thoughts when you heard the mayor make this specific call out to African-American men to step up?
Well, I think most people would agree when you look at the homicide rates and the shooting rates that we got to figure out a way to be more intentional with our work with young black males and even older black males in the community. But I think there's some larger systemic issues that we cannot ignore. I met with a group of fourth grade boys a couple of days ago on Pennsylvania Avenue, and talking to these little boys about their hopes and dreams for the future. Fourth grade boys at Furman Templeton Elementary School, and the boys talked about wanting to go to college and wanting to get married and wanting to leave Baltimore and come back to kind of rebuild the community. And while all of that sounds good to say, reality is if there isn't a more intentional strategy community-wide to address the spiraling decline of life, particularly among black men and boys, we continue to see these homicide rates that I dealt with when I was, you know, the same age as these little boys that all three of us are working with now. And so I just think that there's some larger issues at play. And I think that oftentimes we get very upset over comments and articles that come out in the paper. But the sad reality is so many of our young black males are at risk.
And what do you think of this specific call out to black men to step up and do more?
I think that black men do need to figure out a way to do more, but also we cannot ignore all of the unsung heroes. There are countless numbers of black men. I wouldn't be doing the work that I'm doing now and have over 20 years doing this work locally and nationally if it wasn't for the mentoring of black men like Adamola Kulona and Richard Rowe. And there's just a whole host of black men. I think that the challenge is, which is absent from this conversation, Dan, is there are black men who can go into the schools and work in these communities, but without the resources, it's very, 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 very difficult. And then there you find that there are nonprofits and organizations that get funding to work in the community that have zero community credibility and do not have the capacity to work with these young black males that they've been funded to work with. And I know that's not real popular to say, but it's the reality.
That's David Miller of the Dare to Be King Project. And we'll tell you about his project during the course of this hour, some more details about it. Now we'll go to Cameron Miles, who's been mentoring. His program is Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood. It's been around since 1996. What did you think, Cameron, of the mayor's specific call out last week?
I totally agree, Dan, with the mayor's comments. She has the kind of pulpit that will allow her to say certain things and hopefully get a response. There are a lot of men that are in the town that could be working with young men, but for whatever reason haven't catapulted, haven't been pushed, haven't had the clarion call to get out and do something. In 1996, I started with five young men in a cafeteria on Biddle Street. And we've grown over the years. We've served over 3,000 young men. So I think that she's right on point with calling men to do something that they should have already been doing. Yes, I wish that I received a salary. I wish that I was getting money to do many of the things I want to do. But she's a mother. She had a father. She has a brother. So she cares about this population. And I believe that more of us have to get involved.
I want to go to James Timpson. It seems like this conversation, we've heard this before. It's just that the mayor elevated it from the mayor's bully pulpit, as you said, Cameron. I think of the Reverend Willie Ray, you know, us killing us equals genocide. But that's been around in Baltimore for 20 years, more than that. Right, James? I mean, this is a conversation that does go on.
Absolutely. It's a conversation that's had quite often. And again, I think the mayor was right on point with saying that more black men do need to step up and get involved. And there are a lot of different ways to get involved, like through the programs that myself and the other two gentlemen here are involved in. There are many ways for our African-American men to get involved, and they should take that opportunity to.
James Timpson is wearing his Safe Streets sweatshirt. It was a T-shirt last time because you're here in warmer weather. But it says the same thing, stop shooting, start living. And just in brief, James, for our listeners who aren't familiar with Safe Streets, what do you and your colleagues do?
Okay, so Safe Streets is a public health approach to actually stop homicides and shootings or reduce homicides and shootings. And the way we do that is by going out into the community, and we target the at-risk gentlemen out there, the ones who we know are responsible for actually perpetrating the violence, as well as the ones who are victims of the violence. And the goal or the way we do that is by having a team of outreach workers out there on the streets who actually work with these gentlemen. We go out and we find the gentlemen who we know are most likely to commit these crimes or be victims of these crimes, and we try to do what we can to actually help them change the way that they view violence.
You're an interrupter. It's interesting. James Timpson comes in when it's not too late, because the fact that you do your work says that you believe it's not too late to intervene and stop more violence from happening. But where you are, David, and you are, Cameron, you're with the teenagers. David's with even younger boys. And outside of the public arena, James is supported by the health department, right?
Absolutely.
Safe Streets program. David, you're at the other end. You were working with young boys as a nonprofit, right? So is Cameron.
8 to 18.
8 to 18 is
yes.
Your group.
Yes, sir.
And David, you about the same, or is it younger?
I would say 8 to 18. But most of our work, when we first started, like Cameron has been doing this a long time, and we have too. When we first started, we were actually running programs, after school programs, summer camps. We decided to shift gears because we began to realize that a lot of the adults that are working with young people do not have the skills, the training, and the kind of roadmap that they need to address a lot of these challenges that these boys are faced with. So a lot of our work now is working with the adults that are working with children.
I mean, mentoring sounds great. It's not for everybody. And you can't just walk in and assume that you're a mentor just by being
Absolutely
an adult,
not.
Right,
That's
Cameron?
That's correct. You got to be real with the young people. Mm-hmm. You got to be consistent. Your yes has to be yes. Your no has to be no. And a lot of times, many of our young people have been disappointed and lied to over and over again, Dan. When we tell them we're going to do something, we got to make sure that we do it, because they've been disappointed so many times before. And we got to thank our women. I mean, the women have kept the African-American community together since time began. And now we're doing a mentoring program. I'm working with 40 to 50 young men who are being raised by a grandmother, an auntie, or a single mother who's struggling and has other siblings. And Dan, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but at some point, I think that the general managers of television stations, what I call tell-lie-vision, we need to get them involved, because the stories that are depicted in the news are all too often negative stories. Mm-hmm. And I think when people continue to see us perpetrating negative after negative after negative, it does something to the subconscious mind, and they're afraid of a David Miller, this gentleman and myself, when they see me walking down the street. And they already have a picture. The judges already have a picture before they sentence my son or David's son, because because of what the TV and the news has shown over and over and over again. We need positive messages, positive stories. Until the assignment editors start giving and putting forth those positive stories, we're not going to be looked at in a positive way.
It also skews the picture of Baltimore. I mean,
yes, sir.
I mentioned 211 homicides is not great, but it's much less than there used to be. Violent crime is down generally across the board, but you wouldn't know that from news reporting generally. But we have to take a break. So we're going to take a break here and come back and continue our conversation with Cameron Miles, James Timpson, and David Miller. But we want your calls and your comments. So please ring us up right now, 410-662-8780. We got a couple of lines open. We'll take some calls as soon as we get back. A couple of interesting letters to the editor in the Sun about the mayor's comments. One that jumped off the page the other day under the headline, Mayor Throws Black Men Under the Bus. Too often, it says, during the prelude to major elections and campaigns, those who are routinely demonized, pathologized, and disenfranchised become the targets of finger-pointing politicians who are quick to score brownie and blondie points with the dog whistle hounded hoi polloi. It's a scripted, insidious pablum that may actually foster and engender racism and violence while claiming to address and eradicate it. A question from, I guess, David Miller, Cameron Miles, James Timpson. Does this a statement by the mayor, although elevating a conversation that's been going on among African Americans for a long time, does it just put the onus on black men specifically and sort of give the rest of us a break, you know?
Well, it doesn't. And this is a larger community issue. And one of the questions that I asked your producer was, where's the outrage from the white citizens? When a young black male is killed in Sandtown or Park Heights, people should be outraged in general. But I think the problem oftentimes, as Cameron alluded to, is when you consistently read and see negative portrayals about black men and black family life, it's real difficult to honor the humanity of the humanity of these young black boys and black men who are being killed. Baltimore has a public relations issue. The reason why I say that is because the vast majority of black men and boys are doing well, not involved in any criminal activity. The young brothers are going to school. The young men are fighting hard to get their lives together. They're going to college. But you rarely see those stories.
We don't hear about them.
About successful black men. You got three black men here. You born and raised in Baltimore?
Absolutely.
Three black men here, successfully born and raised in Baltimore. And you seldom hear about us in any of the major media outlets. That's problematic when you continue to highlight the pathologies and the deficits that you see in a community.
Do you agree with that letter? Yeah, I guess you don't. Mm-hmm. The mayor's throwing black men under the bus with this statement. You don't see
no,
that,
sir.
Cameron?
No.
All right, well, we're going to take some calls and hear what our listeners have to say, and then we'll have more conversation.
Can I say something about
sure,
the white men?
I think that
white people are engaged, some of them, maybe not all. I invite white speakers to my program.
Can I ask you about that? I want to ask you.
And if we're honest,
like,
more money has come in to help me do what I'm doing from white people than across the years and anybody else.
Well, that's how they can support you. The idea of a white man becoming a mentor to a young black boy in Baltimore.
But our young black men need to be able to get along in life.
Talk about that.
If they don't hear from a Dan Rodericks or the former councilman, Mr. Cole, if they don't hear from somebody like that, if they don't identify, you can come in your pair of jeans and a button-down shirt and say whatever it is that you've gone through. Somebody in the room may be able to identify. But beyond that, Dan, hey, this white man doesn't hate me. He took the time on a Saturday to come in and talk to me. And that's how I'm spinning it. So I want to bring black, white, male, and female to talk to young people and have conversations. You show me that you're real by your actions. It's not just what you say. You could say, Dan, I'm going to send you a check for $150. And it's 2016. Hey, Dan, I'm still waiting on that check. You know, I have a different opinion of you
right. Because
you said you were going to do something and you didn't do it.
Right.
It has to do with the heart and really caring and your passion. We got to be real. And again, Dan, I said this before, we got to do what we say we're going to do. Our yes has to be yes. Our no has to be no. If I tell the guys, I'm going to show up Saturday, we're going to D.C., And I've worked 70 hours this week. I'm asleep Saturday. They're all there waiting at New Shiloh where we hold our meetings. Mr. Miles doesn't show up. My credibility is gone and out the window, Dan.
Absolutely.
James, you want to address that too, that question that this is a job for black men and not necessarily white men,
no,
white women?
I think if I look at it from the mayor's standpoint, I think she was actually referring to those who are most credible and most actually in the best position to actually do the work. And that is the African-American male. Who better to mentor young African-American males than people they can identify to, which is gentlemen who look like them, who come from the same backgrounds that they do. Not saying that there aren't, you know, white people who don't come from that same same type of background. But I think her biggest point was that the most credible people to reach these young men at this time right now is other African-American
men. Think about it. Who do you relate to in life? You relate to people whose life story is very similar to yours.
Absolutely.
Right? That's true for everybody. But I like what Cameron's saying about the role that a white guy like me could play among the
kids. And we got to be successful. Yeah. We're not in a bubble, Dan. Mm-hmm. I can't go through life just working with black people. I got to learn to get along with white people, brown people, Asian, Hispanic. You know, we got to be able to do it all.
Cameron Miles is director and founder of Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood. James Timpson, director at Park Heights Safe Streets. And David Miller is founder of the Dare to Be King Project for African-American Boys. We'll talk about his project during this hour, tell you more about it. Let's go to the phone lines. Lindsay in Baltimore, thank you for holding. Go right ahead with your comments, please.
Hi, Dan. Great show. Such an important topic. So obviously the call to end violence on the mayor's part is a good thing. And my hat goes off to the three inspired and inspiring men that you have on your show. But it does not begin to be enough, and I know they would all agree with this. This is a whole city problem. It's not just a matter of, you know, who selectively should be working on this. Everybody should be absolutely outraged at not just the violence, but the poverty, et cetera. One of the things I wanted to say is you probably know about the starfish philosophy, that when there's a lot of starfish that are stranded on the beach, you go by and each one that you pick up is you're saving a life and putting them back in the ocean. But in Baltimore, we have to look at the ocean. What is the environment that's leading young boys and men into the kind of lifestyle that they end up in? This is a systemic issue. And, you know, to me, it's pretty wishful thinking to simply put it on individual men. I don't mean to be patronizing, but I feel like everybody needs to read The New Jim Crow. Everybody needs to read Root Shock. Everybody needs to watch The Wire. You know, we have to focus on the traps that poverty and this lack of opportunity, especially jobs, those traps are set very, very early in life. And so I'll just wrap it up by saying that to me, this is a good thing. I'm not trying to be critical of what anybody's doing, but none of this is getting at the profound roots of all this violence and drugs in Baltimore. You can't have a smattering of even excellent feel-good programs when the real money goes into the Inner Harbor and commercial development and things that are not benefiting all of the impoverished neighborhoods. It's a massive swath of poverty through Baltimore.
One in four Baltimoreans lives below the poverty line, according to the last census. Cameron Miles.
I'd just like to say, Dan, in reference to Ms. Lindsay's comments, when you take a young man to a Harvard or to a Princeton or to a Yale, or to a Hampton or a Delaware State, and they've never been out of Baltimore, that hits at the root of the problem. I mean, it changes. That exposure, you can't believe the looks on young men's faces when we get on a coach bus, not a school bus, and we're riding across the country, and they're seeing all that they're seeing. And to go to a major university, going to a nice restaurant, having a meal, learning about etiquette, where to put a napkin, enjoying the food, going to a nice hotel and having a great time, going in the weight room, that changes lives forever. So the work that we're doing is making a difference, and there could be even more young men in the juvenile system in Baltimore at the Shelton Hams and the Hickeys and baby booking on Gay Street.
Who got that kind of experience, you mean?
Who didn't get it.
Who didn't? I'm saying who could if there were.
Absolutely.
Your program, other programs.
And I'm just one. I'm just one guy. I'm not trying to save the world, but I'm doing my part, and we're making a difference.
And Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood is basically like a once-a-month thing?
It's no, sir. We meet the first and the third Saturday. First Saturday, we have tutoring, math, English, reading, and writing. We want our young men to be able to write, know where to put a comma, how to speak intelligently and clearly in front of audiences. They're adults, Dan, that can't speak in front of groups. They're scared.
And then
so
what
we do,
do
that. And the third Saturday, we have speakers come in, black, white, male, female, from different occupations, so our young men can start thinking about what they want to do with their lives. We recently had the Naval Academy come and tell them what the criteria is. We have workshops. We had an Asian orthodontist that came in and talked about his field and did, you know, a PowerPoint. Those kind of things are powerful, and it plants positive seeds. Everybody can't be an athlete.
Let's take another call. Amanda in Dundalk, thank you for calling Midday. Go right ahead, Amanda.
Hi, my name is Amanda. I am the director of a youth program very similar to one of your guests. We do this every day. I am just outside of the city, and I completely agree that there is an absence of co-parenting, of homes. I work with 100% African-American population, but my most powerful parents, my parents that show up at every meeting at school, my parents that show up to pick their kids up every day from our program after school, are the fathers. But these are also the gentlemen who I go with to social services to get assistance, and they're being denied. And when I go back to appeal to those above me in the social services department, it's being told because they're black men. So
they're actually told that? You're saying someone says that to them?
They're not being told. That's never being told to my parents that I'm going with to help them through that process. But when I go up and I speak to other members, the general consensus is that there's this feeling that you don't need to support the black man.
Okay. Any comments about that? Because I mean, I know what she's talking about. I know what some of the rules are. But I don't. Any comment about that, David?
I mean, man, this could be. We could have this show every day.
Yeah,
man.
It takes us off on a tangent a little bit.
Part of it is, to some degree, again, this demonization of the image of black men and black males. I grew up in Baltimore, and Cameron grew up in Baltimore. This brother with Safe Streets grew up in Baltimore, and I think part of the problem is this consistent demonization, not just locally, nationally. When you look at the issue in Ferguson, when Darren Wilson shot and killed Mike Brown, when they interviewed Darren Wilson, one of the things that he said was that Mike Brown was like a demon or a monster.
Yeah, I remember the
term. See, it's real easy to ignore.
I forget the exact terms. It was something like that.
It's real easy to ignore me as a black man.
Yeah.
When your perspective of me or your perception of me is that I'm a demon or that I'm a monster.
Yeah.
And I think too often we have demonized. Again, Baltimore has a PR problem. Because the vast majority of black men and boys are doing what we are supposed to do. There is a very small element of criminality in the community that we got to address.
I think what Amanda was getting at is that the rules sort of prohibit involved fathers from getting financial support if they're raising kids. I think that's what she was talking about.
I agree with you, Dan. I think that body language also says a lot. When men go to get particular services, black men, sometimes they're met with a disdain or the eye contact or I can't help you or you got to sit down and wait. We have to be very careful, and I would say this to the police department as well. We can't expect young people to respect us if we are calling them every name but a child of God, cursing them, making them take their pants down and sit on the side of a curb. I've seen that happen here in this city. That's a level of disrespect that causes many to hate the police department. And we need the police to support and to protect us. But you can't treat young people any kind of way. And you can't treat those men who are going to social services and other agencies any kind of way and expect them to do what they need to do to help take care of their families.
I want to go to James Timpson before we take our next phone call here, because as director of Park Heights Safe Streets, when you're out on the street trying to intervene, trying to interrupt, trying to keep somebody from getting killed.
Absolutely.
Right. What is the most effective approach to the young man who's, you know, really not looking at you, seems hard to talk to, seems to be lost in whatever stuff of the street he's involved in, right? What's the most effective approach?
The biggest thing that we try to, you know, oftentimes me and my coworkers talk about how we sell hope. We sell hope every day. And we give them the hope of, if you try to solve this a different way, then maybe there's something different for you at the end of all of this.
Do they believe? They don't believe that at first, do they?
It just depends, you know. And again, that's why a big part of our program is having those credible messengers, because the people who are actually going out there and talking to them are people who they already either know, kind of trust, or they even, or if they don't know or really know them like that, they've at least heard of them or they have some type of reputation. Mm-hmm. So the credibility piece plays a very important piece in the work that we do, because whether they believe it or not, they will give you the chance to actually follow through with what you say just because of the credibility.
They will.
Yes.
Okay, because that gets me to what Cameron was talking about before, the follow through, right? Mm-hmm. So you go out and talk to a young guy who's on the street and he's into something and he's maybe at risk. Maybe he's even been shot once already,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you pluck him out of that? You got to offer him something other than what he's looking at on the street, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's hard to, what do you offer him? Well, a job? You know?
Yeah, we do. We work hard at actually trying to find people jobs at our particular site. We do. And, you know, one of the big things that we do is we try to help them eliminate all those issues that has them out there on the streets. So doing what they're doing. And if that be a social service issue, if that be a housing issue. But our resources are limited just as a Safe Streets program because mm-hmm. we are small staff. So we do the best we can with actually trying to meet the needs of the people as we come in contact with them. But again, it's about getting them to change that mindset and to view violence and to view the community and the way that they do things differently.
That's we got to show them positive things, Dan. You mm-hmm. can't. Many of these communities in Baltimore City, I don't know where you live at, but they look like places that I saw over in Iraq.
War zones.
In Afghanistan. I mean, you know, we can't say one thing and then they go to the Inner Harbor and thing at Fells Point and they look a whole lot different. I mean, these young people are not stupid. They know, many of them, Dan, are I don't know if you know about our homeless juvenile population in Baltimore. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. We're doing a show tomorrow on homelessness.
Many young people are living in homeless environments with plastic up against the window. Many of our young people are hungry and they feel they got to do whatever they need to do to be able to feed themselves, keep clothes on their back. Some of these young people are taking care of siblings because of a drug-addicted mother or father. I mean, there's so many challenges. We need a triage effect, and financial resources need to be a part of the game.
Let's take another call. John in Baltimore, we welcome you to our conversation on Midday. Hi.
Hi. I think the grassroots problem here is the family. The mayor, in desperation, came out and said, you know, gee, guys, stop killing each other, stop selling drugs and all that. I think it needed to go further to where she would be specific and say, you know, how many kids are born out of wedlock? You know, the gentleman just was speaking about young men not having a place to stay. They're out on the streets. You know, I grew up on Fayette and Collington Avenue. I got a master's degree. No financial aid at that period of time. I just saw that it was a better life. And I think these guys need that. I agree with your panel in the vision that young black guys have for themselves. I remember the movie where Denzel Washington was a lawyer and Tom Hanks was had a physical problem. And in there, Denzel Washington's wearing a suit and tie. He's got a family. He's living a really good life and contributing to society. There's too many movies that come out where black guys are, you know, selling dope or on the streets. They see that. I remember as a kid seeing John Wayne movies. When you come out, you feel kind of like that's the way you should treat your friends the way, you know, the way they did in the Western movies and all that. And now all you're seeing is guys playing basketball and what have you. But I think it's the women also. If you pick somebody that's not going to be there for your children, you know, before you do that, before you have the children, don't have them.
All right, let's get some comments on that. Cameron?
You know, there's not enough said about the fact that last year teen pregnancy went down 33%. I don't hear a lot happening about that. And I'd also like to say to Dan, a lot of young men come to me and say, Mr. Miles, I'm not going to live beyond 21. Mm-hmm. I need to do as much as I can do within these 21 years because I'm not going to be here for a long time. They're not seeing those positive images. So I'm like, Dante, Juan, whatever his name is, I need you to come and spend some time. I need you to see what I'm doing. Give me an opportunity. Let me take you to a Wizards game. Let me take you to a cop and basketball game. Those are just some of the things. And then next month, Dan, we're going to D.C.
Do you talk to boys about getting girls pregnant?
Absolutely. I want them, Dan, to think with the big head and not with the little one. And I tell them that repeatedly, month after month. But we also got to go a step further and have the House of Ruth come in and do, you know, domestic violence. We got to have the health department come in and talk about condoms and STDs and AIDS. So you got to have that whole triage effect.
David Miller, did you want to comment? We have to take a break here. But
you know, these are decade-old challenges that we are faced with. Cameron is, I think, on the other side of 50. I'm 47. This brother is, I don't know how, 40. All three of us dealt with the same issue. So these issues that we're faced with are generational. And it's time for us to really collectively work together to address these boys in these war-torn communities.
David Miller, founder of Dare to Be King Project in Baltimore, will tell you about that when we get back. James Timpson with us, director at Park Heights Safe Streets, and Cameron Miles, director and founder of Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood, all with us on Midday for the remainder of the hour. A short break. We'll be right back. Here's an email comment from Liz, one of our listeners. Mentoring is great. Adults being involved in the lives of kids is great, but the mayor is ignoring the roots of the problem. Those roots aren't about blackness or maleness. It's not cultural. The roots are societal. Poverty, lack of opportunity, inequality in education, racism in societal structures. And while all of us need to work on these problems together, those in government have a special responsibility for increasing opportunity, improving education, combating poverty. The mayor is shifting responsibility to black men, and that's ridiculous. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. Back to the phone lines to get some comments in here. Robert in Baltimore, you're up next. Go right ahead, please.
Well, I think the mayor was right about highlighting the fact, and she shouldn't be judged for it, whether it was political or not. I think our community does have to take responsibility for our community if we're going to do it. But that also means that our community has to hold responsible institutions for the conditions that we're in. When 90% of the tax dollar is diverted to other communities, where you have a police department of 3,600 and less than 21% of that in a black city are African-American, the public works department has 614 employees. Out of that 614, only 204 are African American. And then you even have institutions like the Sun Paper, who work to destroy black businesses. A few years ago, your show did an article on bail bonding. As a result of your show, two of the biggest bail bond businesses are out of business, while Fred Frank thrives, and you had 39 black businesses who are now not in business. And so when we get economic opportunities, we're destroyed by institutions. After we're being destroyed by institutions, we never get a chance to move our community forward and participate.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Any comments on that for anyone here? We'll go to the next caller, Jack in Annapolis. Jack, go right ahead. Hi. Jack, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Well, I live in Annapolis. I'm a white 50-year-old man. And, you know, it just pains me, and it's pained me for years and years and years. But I think one thing that I can understand is the way that the media uses the black-white thing to sell. And when you hear about Ferguson, it was a white police officer shot a black kid. But then on other instances, I mean, why does it have to be a white cop shot a black guy? Why can't it be a cop took the life of a young man? And plain and simple.
Because those are the facts, because there's a lot of history behind that, because this is a big deal. Does someone here want to explain that to Jack? Anyone?
I think, again, and this is Cameron Miles, I think that when many of our officers who are white, when they come upon black men, they're automatically in a sense of fear because of what the subliminal messages show him or her on the 6 and 11 o'clock news. That mindset has been permeated in many of our police officers and just everyday folk that black men are to be feared. They can't be trusted. Watch them. Every negative connotation is you know, in compliance with that. And I just think that until that changes, until we have more positive images put forth and people feel more at ease, if you will, around African-American men, things are not going to change. And we can take the NCAA.
See how you can disregard the history there.
We can take the NCAA. I mean,
how do you disregard the history of something like that by saying, oh, well, it's just a cop. Yeah, it's just a cop a kid.
Well, Dan, one of the larger issues that we got to come to grips with, right, and I get thrown under the bus all of the time, but if young white males were being killed in Baltimore at similar rates, the conversation and action steps would be different. And so at some point, when do we recognize the humanity of black men in the black community? And that doesn't mean that there isn't work that needs to be done in the black community, because the work is getting done. Do we need to figure out ways to accelerate the work and do more? Of course. And so this issue of race comes up because, again, what would happen, Dan? You are a white man. Mm-hmm. I am a black man. What would happen? Honestly, tell me what you think would happen if 189 young white men were killed in Baltimore in 2015. The conversation and the action
just wouldn't be happening.
So this issue of race has to be addressed.
Yeah.
But also, we got to deal with this
issue. Makes people uncomfortable. I'm glad we're doing this today. And in a way, I'm glad the mayor brought this up the way she did. But it does make people uncomfortable. A letter to the editor of The Sun criticizing the Sun for having a front page story about racism in Baltimore in Sunday's paper, saying it's not helping to even address this. And I, you know, respectfully disagree.
You talked about race when you asked us to be a part of this conversation. So I'm thinking about the NCAA tournament. I'm trying to make it lighter. Mm-hmm. When the committee got together to make the selection, if you paid attention to that, the committee was all white. The majority of the players
are black.
Right. You know, you can go a lot of different ways with this, but racism exists, and it's going to take all of us dialoguing and working together and at the end of the day trying to find solutions to make things better. But if at next year we're still at this same point, was it worth it? And then we got to think of, we can't forget about minority businesses, Dan, and why they don't get the percentage of contracts that white businesses get.
David,
I was just going to say really quickly, these younger boys, these 8 and 9 year old boys, they want to see us in the schools. They want us to work with them. We go to schools and it's almost like Jay-Z walked in the building, because these little boys want to see positive representations of black male, of black manhood and black life. And they want us to work with them.
James?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree with David 100%. A lot of the kids that we deal with on the street, of course, they come from the neighborhood, but they go to these neighborhood schools, and it's important for us to be able to, and the position that we're in, it's important for us to be able to head those problems off, because a lot of the problems that come from school spill out into the neighborhood, and vice versa. A lot of problems from the neighborhood go into school. And it is true. A lot of those young men do look forward to the interactions that they have with us to help give them some type of guidance. Because believe it or not, contrary to, you know, what people may believe, they actually want to do the right thing. A lot of them.
Can you say that again?
Yeah, they actually want to do the right thing.
But you got to be real.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to be real with them.
And we want to be real with you, Dan.
Yeah, you are. You are real, Cameron. Here's Meg in Baltimore. Be real with Meg. Meg, you're on Midday. Hi.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. So I had two quick thoughts. The first is that it is, of course, vitally important to have black men who are available to serve as role models. At the same time, there is plenty of work to do. So if somebody wants to help, they should absolutely find a way to help. I work with mostly men who are coming out of incarceration after 20 or more years, most of whom are African-American. I'm a white middle-class woman. And, you know, I don't pretend that I know what it's like to be a black man who's been in prison for 20 or more years. Obviously, I don't. But what I do is authentically come and be my authentic self, be real, if you will, and say, you know, what can I do to help you? What are your goals? And what can I do to facilitate those goals? And that brings me to my second point, which is that the most important thing about helping an individual or a community is to listen. Mm-hmm. To say, what do you need? What do you want to do? Because it's not that people don't know what they want or know what they need to do. It's that they don't necessarily know the steps to get there.
All right. Meg, thank you very much. You know, what if the mayor had called out to white men to get involved? This has specific resonance, important resonance the other way. It doesn't work the other way, does it?
I think that you would have some that would get involved and some would feel like, you know, it's not my problem. But everybody's busy. You know, I think it has to do, Dan, with priorities. Mm-hmm. Is it more important for me to work with young black boys, or is it important for me to go to the center club to have lunch or to play golf, mm-hmm. or to go to my board meeting? So right. It's where you prioritize. Right.
And Cameron makes the point. Baltimore will never be the city that Baltimore needs to be if we don't address this issue. Because this issue is decades long.
What is this? And what is this? The violence?
Issue, the issue the, what of, is it? Of, race. Of race.
Yeah, okay.
Got to deal with it.
Yeah.
Race and also disenfranchisement.
Let's take another call. We're almost out of time here. Lorenzo in Baltimore, please be brief. Go right ahead.
Hi, Dan. Great show.
Thanks.
First of all, you know, I want to commend these three gentlemen because they are, you know, trying to do something to help our community. I'm a black man. I 54-year-old father of twin sons, a single dad I was, as a matter of fact. They're grown now. Now I grew up in the projects in another state, but grew up poor to a single mother. I made some bad choices when I was at a younger age, but I got my stuff together. I own my own business right now, and I hire people. I pay taxes. Everything that you want to do to be considered a valuable member of society and a citizen of America, I do. I've been through racism. I actually got promoted at a younger age, the only brother in an all-white business, because I was the best person there to do the job. But I dealt with racism and prejudice. I've dealt with all this stuff. But I want to say this. I'm really sick of us acting like victims. Okay? Yeah, it's racism. And let me give you a clue.
Well, Lorenzo, we're short. Make it quick.
Okay, no, but let me say this. Racism is not going away until we get rid of it. Okay?
Okay.
You're not going to change anybody's heart until we stand up and be men, take care of our kids, take care of our communities, stop asking for help, go out and do it ourselves. Okay?
All right. Lorenzo, I'm sorry, I'm out of time. We're going to continue our conversation in the next hour, though, more on this subject or related to this subject. Cameron Miles, director and founder of Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood. Thank you for being here. We're going to tell folks about Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood on the Dan Rodrick's Facebook page, and we'll have you back again another time. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank
Dan.
You, Cameron. James Timpson, great to have you on the show again. Thank you for the work you're doing with Park Heights Safe Streets.
Thank you, Dan.
And David Miller's program, again, is called Dare to Be King Project. We didn't get a chance to talk about the survival kit and the training that you do, David, but we'll put some information about this on the Facebook page as well, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for being here. David Miller from Dare to Be King Project. Okay, a short break for the news, and we'll see you for the second hour.